This magazine is bigger than any. It has an amazing heritage. I actually donated every single back copy for free to archives.net. So you can actually see the history of the newspaper industry from the late 1880s to today for free on the internet, because it really is more than just a magazine. It is a voice of an industry that is more than just an industry. I know I'm getting very ethereal here, but remember, we're that final check in the Constitution, the free press. So this is what we are as an industry today. We are not just newspapers, you know, running classifieds or ads. We are a local journalistic environment helping bring truth to power, if I can be so bold. So that is why I wanted to take it over to help a struggling industry today.
Welcome to the News Nirvana podcast. I'm your host, Nick Parker. The News Nirvana podcast features conversations with media professionals from across the country, highlighting our ever-evolving business models and showcasing the strong and effective journalism produced each and every day. This podcast is made possible to you by the generosity of Town News. Town News delivers solutions, services, and guidance empowering local media organizations to thrive in an ever-changing digital world. Contact Town News today to learn more how they can help you thrive. Connect with them at townnews.com. Mike Blender, publisher and editor of Editor and Publisher and a fellow podcaster, ENP Reports. Welcome to the News Nirvana podcast.
I'm honored to be here, sir. Thank you. And thank you for pronouncing my name correctly. Ever since I was six, I was called Blinder. So when I was a disc jockey, I changed my name to my first and middle name, Mike Lawrence, because it was always getting mispronounced. So it's Blinder, and thank you, sir. I appreciate it.
My pleasure. I do always try to get them right.
Thank you.
part of our job, right? You are, I think you're the first on our News Nirvana podcast, the first that is a fellow podcaster. So it's nice to have somebody on who does the same stuff.
Yeah, I enjoy it. ENP has been the, I guess if you look it up in Wikipedia, they call us the Bible of the newspaper industry. Since we've been around since 1884, I only took it over less than 2 years ago. But I try to amplify our stories a lot by, you know, going more in depth with some of the people we interview. Sometimes they're fun and light, sometimes they're deep, but I'm really enjoying it. I'm new at the whole thing, but I'm having a blast with it.
Yeah, and it's a totally different style of interview, and at least for me, who, you know, I came up on the editorial side in newspapers, and when I started doing podcasts 4 or 5 years ago, I kind of had to learn a different style of interviewing and a way to get information, and like you're kind of asking in a different order than normal. I mean, you know, when I write, I don't care about the order of questions as much as I do now when we're in this format.
I agree completely.
But it has been fun, and it's a whole new way to really to get people's stories out. I want to start with you just about the magazine, about Editor and Publisher. As you just mentioned, you've only done this for almost 2 years. Since you purchased it and took over. Why? let's just start here. Why did you look at this magazine and say, I want it?
At the time when I was asked that question, it was September, when it got announced on September 1st, 2019. And I had already done 6 months of due diligence by flying into California and speaking to the owner, then a guy by the name of Duncan McIntosh. And not that I'm going to get political, but the big story then was that President Trump was looking at Greenland. So I basically said, well, I thought I'd buy Greenland. That wasn't available, so I bought the magazine. I'm just kidding. the other response was I was drinking heavily and didn't know what the hell I was doing. No.
Well, that's a more newspapery response.
my background was for 20 years as a newspaper revenue consultant, and not just for North America, but worldwide. I had clients in India. We went all through the UK, and we helped, during that entire digital revolution, helped local salespeople adapt into a multimedia sales environment. And how we did that was in these four-legged sales calls where we not only trained them in the classroom, but in the car. So I had a team of professionals that would fly into a city, spend weeks with the team and help them close deals, because that's how you really teach a sales process, is in the car, you know, during the sales process.
Right.
So I made some money doing that over 20 years and got pretty well known, I think, I can say with some modesty, in the industry on the business side. The magazine deal was brought to me. I didn't seek it out. And at the time, you know, I was in my 60s. I still am, actually. And I was thinking, wow, what an interesting idea to actually be a publisher. So you have to understand, because for 20 years, all I did was generate ads, whether they were digital or print.
Right.
And generated ad. So I never had to fulfill it. I would leave a city and dump a whole mess of contracts on the, like, you know, you print it. You make the ads. And I learned that when you're a publisher, you actually have to pay for postage. You have to pay for printing. You have to pay for people.
There's a whole other part of it.
The truth is that I wanted to, this magazine's bigger than anyone. It has an amazing heritage. I actually donated every single back copy for free to archives.net. So you can actually see the history of the newspaper industry from the late 1880s to today for free on the internet. Because it really is more than just a magazine. It is a voice of an industry that is more than just an industry. I know I'm getting very ethereal here, but remember, we're that final check in the Constitution, the free press. So this is what we are as an industry today. We are not just newspapers, you know, running classifieds or ads. We are a local journalistic environment helping bring truth to power, if I can be so bold. So that is why I wanted to take it over, to help a struggling industry today. It is not, you know, there's a lot of issues impacting local journalism today, and keeping it alive and keep it flourishing is more than just helping a business. It's helping the democratic society. And if that sounds too ethereal or too bombastic, please excuse my pontification, sir.
I'm going to imagine, and I'm pretty sure this is true, that most of our audience is industry people like us. So look, I think waxing romantic about the news industry is perfectly appropriate.
Well,
and for those of us that are in it, it is romantic.
But it's so true. I mean, yeah, I watched this industry for 20. I remember when I first got into the industry, I did it obliquely. I was running a radio group in Portland, Maine in 1998. And the Portland, Maine Press Herald knew I was a nerd. I mean, I was carrying a computer around in 98. I worked through college at Radio Shack, selling the first TRS-80 computer with cassette storage. So I understood computers before everyone knew what they were. So suddenly they say, would you like to help us start our online newspaper? I said, what's online? And I dived into it and became like the original digital newspaper pioneers. I actually was nominated for a Pioneer Award from the NAA in 2003. So I came into it from like broadcast. And when I got into it, I remember going into the Portland, Maine Press Herald's classified department, 200 people like at desks with thousands of operators on the phone and big clocks showing them hang time, hang up the phone quicker so you can get the next ad. And I watched all that erode and go away. You understand? Over 8 years, because by 2008, classifieds were gone.
Well,
so
right.
Again, I watched that industry go through, this industry go through so many changes, mostly on the business side. But now it's in a crisis mode. It needs to survive.
Well, right. We are finding that we have to change our models a little bit.
Yes, we do.
We've got to make some changes, and I think some of those are happening. I mean, and let's kind of go back into E&P and what you're doing. And you've alluded to this already, that it's kind of a, it is a history of the industry. If you go back through all the things that they've covered. So what are you doing now with content? What do you think your mission is now with the content to not only log kind of the continuing history of the industry, but help make some of those changes or pass along some of the changes that are working?
Well, it's funny. I'm giving a speech. I don't know when this will be broadcast, but when we're recording this, I'm giving a speech next week at the Florida Press Association's annual convention. I'm the keynoter and I'm honored. I live in Florida, so it's not a stretch. I'm driving down to Sarasota from Tampa. But my topic will be pretty much the transformation of E&P. So you're asking because I'm writing that speech as we speak. Here is what, when I was doing the due diligence, I said, what is E&P's lane today? Not yesteryear. In yesteryear, E&P was all things to all people in the newspaper industry. In other words, whether you're in sales, whether you're in editorial, whether you're in management or a starving reporter, you went to this magazine. Those days are gone because just like the newspaper of yesteryear was all things to all people, right? I mean, think about it. The newspapers in the 1970s and 80s and 90s had 80% penetration. So did Ed Sullivan. There's a name you may not know since you're so much younger than me. But Ed Sullivan was a variety show that had an opera singer followed by a puppet guy followed by a stoned out rock and roll band. That doesn't exist. Everything has got a niche now. Does that make sense?
Oh, absolutely.
So EMP's niche today is different from yesterday. And when I took it over, I always said to a publisher, what's your niche? I call it the authoritative voice of news publishing. Now, I use the words news publishing, not newspaper. And the reason is we don't even know what a newspaper is anymore. Because I live in Tampa Bay, Florida. My newspaper, owned by Poynter, the Poynter Institute, if you don't know what that is, it's the think tank educational association of our industry, only publishes in print twice a week now. In Arkansas, the Huston family publishes their statewide newspaper only now in a flipbook format and gave an iPad to everybody. Is it still a newspaper?
Yes.
I think our answer,
I think what we have to tell people is yes.
Yes.
It still is a newspaper.
So
you don't have to qualify it and say digital newspaper, digital news service. It's a newspaper.
A newspaper, if it publishes ongoing in a journalistic way. But I say news publishing for this reason. If I say news media, everybody's changed that name, the local media association now. It used to be the Suburban Newspaper Association. INMA, it used to be the International Newspaper Marketing, and now it's news media. In my opinion, news media includes Google and Facebook, people who curate news. News publishing, here's what I did when I did the due diligence. I wrote down the word news publishing and put three bullets below it. You must be someone who crafts journalistic content. There's number one. You have to be someone that needs to find an audience for it, and you have to be someone that wants to monetize it. So in other words, that to me is who should be reading MP today. That is not just the journalist creating the content. That's in the newsroom. They tend to find places like Neiman or Poynter now, or Knight. They're finding their own environments to learn to be a better journalist. We have stories on journalism, but mostly for the C-suite executive level. If you are in charge of news publishing, if you have those three goals, you see what I'm saying? You could be a one-horse operation doing your own digital site in your city. But that means you have those three goals. I got to create journalistic, that means sourced, well-balanced content, right? I got to find an audience for it, or I have a billboard in my basement, right?
Right.
And I got to make money with it, or that means either nonprofit, get funding, crowdsourcing, advertising, subscription revenue. I don't care. Those are the three pillars to me. So when we publish today, and I always feel good because whenever I do a live workshop or a webinar and I look at we get a couple hundred people to sign up for it. I look at their titles. It's all owner, CFO, CEO. We're the go-to source now for the C-suite executive. And that's the lane of EMP today, in my opinion. And I see it verified through our analytics. I see it verified through our database of 55,000 subscribers. And I see it, verified whenever we do signups or have people register for things.
Well, and do you think... I guess my question is here, even though you are catering, excuse me, sorry. Even though you are catering to the C-suite, do you feel like though your content still has to not just be about the business side of news publishing? Because I feel like, and this is my kind of my opinion on them. I feel like now more than ever, especially the last, 25 years or so. So I kind of worked into the business about 96, 97. On the publishing and on the business side, there are more and more that came up through editorial. Whereas I think when I started, I had a lot of publishers who barely ever stepped foot in a newsroom.
I think that
wall, that proverbial wall, is a little thinner now, and by necessity. I think we found not only should it be, but it can be thinner.
I there's a operation I work with. I still consult because I'm not making EMP is truly a nonprofit because my wife and I have yet to make a profit. We keep putting money back into the, but it's doing very well. We've doubled the revenue and tripled the audience, but we're constantly reinvesting in the product. But I'll tell you this, I'm working with a company that I love called Tap Into, which is individual local journalistic online only sites in New Jersey. They have about 80 of them now. It's like a new patch. And they have millions and millions and millions of page views. But when they're seeking out these entrepreneurs that want to buy into the franchise, because you own your local, you know, tap into website, they keep saying, do I get the journalist to run it or to get the business guy to run it? You see, who is more apt to want to run that platform? And you just asked a billion-dollar question. When I came from broadcast, the guy running the ship always came from the business side. You didn't have a guy coming from the newsroom running a TV station. You follow? Because I came from radio and TV.
Right.
In this industry, it's very common to have someone from editorial running the ship, as they should, because this industry is nothing without good editorial content, without doing the basics of serving the community with great editorial content. So that's a big question. But what if you have strong editorial content, but no idea how to run a business? Will you survive in today's wacky world? And this is why I think EMP has to cater to all sides of that. Yes,
right.
They're constantly doing stories on how to better your newsroom, but more importantly, how to do your job to make sure that you're providing the content people need in the community. But on the other side, that same person's got to know, can I go nonprofit and fund it that way? What are the best systems of reader revenue or audience revenue, whatever you want to call it, or subscription revenue? Can I crowdsource? Can I beg for money? That's working in some markets now where you do the guilt play, right? You put up a little, help fund this newsroom that's providing. Either way, all of that plays into that person who's in charge of news publishing.
I think that's the part of where I think I'm getting to with the wall not only should, but has to be thinner.
Has to.
Because I think we have to change our models. I mean, I'll say right here where I am, where I run I'll say it now. I don't like doing it, but digital newspaper. It is a newspaper. But I had some people in the community. Can we make an old style weekly printed product work? And you do the math, and it doesn't work the way we used to do it. The math just it doesn't add up. And so we have to have new models. And that's why people are doing the crowdfunding. They're doing the reader revenue and all of those things. And it's something that takes a mix.
Well, I might just be an old guy, but whenever I see someone lost, I think that they're getting lost in the weeds. I've interviewed a lot of people on my podcast. We're at the 92nd episode now. So I've had a few years and a number of people. We do it every week religiously. And whenever I see a winner in a small town doing great job, they usually just focus number one on great journalism. I mean, I heard an expression today that I loved. If you're the editor of a local news source, I can say newspaper like you run a newspaper. And if you're in line at a Wendy's and the person in front of you loves what you're doing and the person behind you hates what you're doing a good job. If you're in a line at Wendy's and neither of them know who you are and never heard of your product, you're doing a bad job.
So yeah, what's the cliche? A third read you because they love you, a third read you because they hate you, the other third just want to know what the other two thirds are talking about.
Exactly. I would say the opposite of love is not hate, it's indifference, right? That's the first thing. You just got to make sure you're making a voice in the community that people make them think. But then when it comes to advertising, stop overthinking it. I get at EMP, we don't worry about selling ads. We don't sell inches or impressions. We connect our readers to our advertisers. That's simple. I mean, you just think in those terms. How can I more creatively understand what my advertisers need and get them to connect with them better? And we find innovative ways. And that's what I'm going to talk about next week, because I just don't think newspapers are doing it right anymore. They want to sell an inch. They want to have a rate card. They want to live in the past. They want to sell on a demand level. In other words, here's my rate card. This is a column inch. How many do you want? These are my online ads. How many impressions do you want? And that's the way we've always sold over the decades. We were so popular that our salespeople didn't sell. They just negotiated. Does that make sense? They went in.
Right.
That's not sales. The definition of sales is learning your customer's exact needs and providing a service to them.
The News Nirvana podcast is brought to you by Town News, the creators of IQ Audience Plus. IQ Audience Plus replaces your old school, one-size-fits-all paywall with a smarter metering solution that targets visitors with custom offers, converting drive-bys into paying subscribers. Learn more at townnews.com/audience.
So what are you looking at when you're finding new ways to connect your advertisers, your business partners with your readers? What kind of stuff are you looking at now as far as ways to make that connection?
Some people get pushback on this because remember I am shepherding a 141-year-old brand, and I don't feel like I'm owning or running the brand. I'm only holding on to it for a few years till I hand it off to someone else. And if it dies under my tutelage, I will never let that happen. I mean, I'll go down the all the way because this thing means a lot to me. Okay, so I do very innovative blending of church and state. I mean, not to the point where we hurt the brand, but we don't do sponsored content just by doing advertorial. We do sponsored content by doing case studies. In other words, if a media vendor, we call them, or partner comes to us and says, I have this amazing solution and I'd like to talk more about it to your audience, bring in the newspapers you're helping, bring in the news publishers you're helping, and let us write a case study on that. You follow. Now they've got a real story that really helps them. Yeah, we have to assign. Now I have editors that work just for market. Remember, we don't blur that line. And my newsroom can tell me to go to hell anytime they want. I told them that the day I took them on. You're allowed to tell me to go away. I mean, you protect the journalistic integrity, but they have to approve any sponsored content that's going out. Does this make sense? So
yeah, absolutely.
And then let's assume we do a webinar, which is a case study for one of our partners, which is what we currently do. They're very select. We only do them twice a month. And we get a bunch of executives to sign up for it. That is an audience that they want to talk to. I'm surprised that more media companies aren't doing. See, there's a term that millennials use now called influencers. Does that make sense? Why aren't they creating it? Okay, leave the newsroom intact. Work on the hard news in there and don't touch it. But why don't you have an influencer you're creating locally for local healthcare that's there for aging, one's there for dining out, and have those people do more influencing? Does that make sense? In the same environment you and I are doing, podcasting and video and short stories and things like that. Think outside of the box. If you have an audience, why are they going elsewhere for their influencers? Do you follow my logic? Bring them into
your environment. So have you done that? Have you done this with ENP? Established some influencers?
I am the influencer.
I feel like that needs to be a song. I am the influencer.
No, I'm for 20 years I was on stages doing. I mean, I was on just about every stage at every association over the years. I have some street cred on the business side, so I host the podcast. Does that make sense? Through editorial, they tell me who they want me to interview, and I interview them. And of course, there's still a hard story in the magazine. But then I can do a webinar, if that makes sense, and make sure editorial clears it. Now that webinar is sponsored, but we make it very clear: this is a sponsored broadcast. This is brought to you by blank. We're bringing you a case study from blank. Now it has to have value to the audience. See, that's the true definition of good sponsored or native advertising. It means that the content you're creating has value. Does that make sense? That's what you're really looking for. I'm surprised that most local media companies, I don't think, are going down that road the proper way. Just say, I've got this audience here. Why can't I connect them better with my advertisers? Why am I simply just selling ads? Why am I not finding innovative ways to make sure my readers understand the stories my advertisers have? And that's what we're doing more of here.
Are you as you are kind of moving around and normally I say as you're out and about, but you know, the last 18 months, nobody's been.
Finally getting out. I haven't been on an airplane since January of last year, but I'm going to be taking my first flight in 2 weeks. I wonder if they still take off the same way. I have no idea.
The wings might flap now.
I have no idea. I'll find out soon, my friend. I'll find out soon.
So I guess what are you seeing some examples of some of this happening out with other papers? Are you finding those stories to tell too?
I wish there were more. You understand that the stress the industry is under now with consolidation, thanks to hedge funds. I can say that out loud. We do have, you know, Alden Capital owns pretty much in some way, shape, form, or size most half of the newspapers of the United States right now, where there's not a lot of resources going into those kinds of things. In the local markets, I'm seeing this start to happen more with creative ways that they're finding in order to connect to their readers more. Out of the box, different. And it's taking a whole new person to do it. Someone who's younger, someone who's not thinking in terms of the old ways where, you know, here's a gray card, here's a red card. That's what we did for decades. I mean, for centuries. Think about classifieds. Classifieds wasn't sales. Classifieds was a marketplace where buyers and sellers got together. That was half the revenue for the industry. It's gone.
Right. We had somebody answer the phone. That was it.
Then we treated three incredibly important vertical advertiser categories like dirt. I mean, you just kept raising the rates. You never serviced the realtor, just raised the rate. Never serviced the recruiter, never serviced the car dealer. You got to be in the paper. And then what happened when they found other? See, we weren't doing our job with connecting our advertisers with our readers.
When they realized they could do their own digital things.
We were called by the real estate industry for, I'm sure, I'm not that old, but I'd say for at least 100 years, the necessary evil. Mm-hmm. Whenever you sat down with a realtor, I hate the paper. Why? It's expensive. And why are you in there? Because if I don't put the home in there, the seller gets mad at me. That was the reason. You can spin it any way you want to, but no one loved the paper. No one said, and I'm sure someone's going to listen to this and get mad saying, my realtor loves me. But for decades, in most cases, we were the necessary evil. You know,
I think you're right. And connecting to the different ways of doing things. I've had great success doing a live version of our local podcast. That's part of our newspaper. It's called Town Hall. So when we do a live version of that town hall with an audience, it's a great, that's a perfect way for us to connect sponsors, business partners with that audience.
That's brilliant. That's what we should be doing more. Pre-COVID, a lot of revenue was coming from the event category. People were figuring that out. And because an event is cool, because it's almost like a vertical, because if you do the event on aging or helping people, you know you're going to have an environment of people. Like I'm a baby boomer who recently helped my father go from living with us to assisted living to a nursing home, and finally we lost him. But I'm the decision maker in that category. Does that make sense?
Right.
How can you connect those people with questions to the people who have the services? How about the people who need after school care? The people who are concerned about, I could go on and on. There's so many different categories. Home improvement is a massively important category today. How are we truly connecting them with our readers who happen to be homeowners? If you look at all the data, people think that newspaper readers are old. They're not old. They're people who are more advanced in life, because when you're a kid, you don't care about the local school board. You don't have kids. You're not paying taxes. As you get older and have a home, local news becomes more important to you. You agree. It's that simple. So you're talking to, you know, tend to be someone 35 and older who's a homeowner of a family. There's a lot of people who want to talk to them in today's world.
Let's flip gears just a little bit, and let's shift over to the editorial and the content side of things, because that is some of what you do as well with your content at E&P. I know you have done some series here recently talking about content and talking about some good journalism that happens. You just had a package all about, you know, covering the George Floyd story for the last year or more now. So what are you doing there? How are you highlighting this good journalism that's happening? And I will say this, a part of the show, I think, is for me, is I want to push back a little bit on that narrative of mistrust for our industry, because I think there's a lot of really good journalism happening, and what you're doing is highlighting that.
There's a lot of amazing journalism happening, and it's a shame that it needs to be highlighted. We are an amazing industry that doesn't promote itself enough.
No, we're horrible at that.
We've always been the worst. It's like my father was a dentist and I never got a checkup. The shoemaker's kid goes without shoes, right? We market for our advertiser, can't market for ourselves. Let's use you the example you brought up. That was an amazing story. It was given to me as a lead by their advertising department. You really should talk to our editorial team, because you have no idea what they went through. We had to buy our reporters gas masks and flak jackets, and some of them are getting shot at with rubber bullets. And so how did we handle that story? We first talked about the journalistic aspects of the story, but then when we amplified it through the podcast series, we took it to the new level. What was it like managing that newsroom? And you had to do it through COVID. How did you keep your people motivated? And my favorite quote from that podcast was interesting. When I asked the VP of editorial, how did cable news influence you? through this problem. You know, because how, you know, left, he goes, what's cable news? We never watched it. And suddenly I'm thinking, God, you know, we're all living our own little echo chambers. This is a story on its own that the local journalism that the Star Tribune was doing, they broke the story, as you know. The local journalism was unbiased. They said, we didn't take a tactic. We constantly stayed in the middle of this thing. We saw both sides of it. And how they managed through the process was a story on top of a story. Does that make sense? I always want to make sure I'm talking on the level of not just journalism, but how to craft that journalism effectively. Remember, craft news, find the audience and monetize it. That's the key to our in-depth coverage. And we're doing a good job, I think, especially on that story or others. Go back a ways. We did a wonderful interview, a guy named Joey. He's in his late 20s, now owns 5 newspapers in Kansas. And his competitor's Gannett. Right? I mean, in all these markets, and he's doing weeklies, right, and he's thriving, and he's running the newsroom himself. And it all goes back. And every time I talked to him, I kept saying, man, it's just journalism 101, isn't it? Yep. All I'm doing is I'm embedding myself in the community, being a voice of the community. And it's everything from church suppers to taking on the mayor when he's, see what I'm saying? It's just basic 101. So he's running his newsroom. He's the chief reporter. And we're creating a story around him as well.
Well, and I think that's I like that you said he's a late 20s.
Yeah.
I think, you know, one of the things we all think about, and you are older than me, but you know, us olds that have been in this for a while, I think, you know, one of the questions we always ask is, what's that next generation? Are we doing the right things to recruit and bring in that next generation of great journalists?
And that brings up the issue of diversity and inclusion, which we now focus so much on people of color. But the truth is, our diversity and inclusion, I don't think really focuses on the youth of today. We've done a lot of stories on diversity, and I'm working hard now to launch a new vertical on diversity, because when we dive into the issue, it's not recruiting better. How can we find people so our newsrooms possess the same, how should I say, the same ratios as the people we serve, which doesn't
representative of the communities we cover.
The truth is, the problem is if I may quote Al Sharpton, we're all latte liberals. We're not in putting a environment together in our newsroom that makes them feel inclusive. So they don't want to work for us. They'd rather go off and do what you're doing. Do it on my own. I'll start my own blog. I'll start my own online. You see, so to answer your question, I think in our newsrooms, we're not providing the environment that makes someone who's young and innovative, who wants to think outside of the box, who believes in journalism, feel included.
And you talked earlier about how, you know, you were remembering starting the online news sites. And I remember that too. I think I built our, I was in college at that time, and I built our college's first news website, and all learning HTML at that time and trying to figure it out, stealing code from everybody else and figuring it out. But we have fought as an industry those technology modernization changes harder than any other industry I can think of. So I think you're onto something there, that we haven't always made ourselves ready for the person to come in with an outside the box idea, or even just to embrace the new methods and processes, and that includes technology, of doing things.
My first gig, my first big gig was, I was hired by a company called Ad One, which was a consortium of Gannett, Hearst, Pulitzer, and a few Knight Ridder. And they were trying to get us to aggregate our classifieds, because at the time, Billy Morris, you know, he sold his company to Gannett a few years ago, but Morris, you know, out of Augusta, Georgia, was president of the NAA. And I saw him speak in New York City, and he said, we have to aggregate our classifieds. We have to have one database. This is before Craigslist, Mike.
Right.
We've got the ads. I'm trying to do it in his voice. We are the portals. Remember the word portal? We all thought we were portals back then. We got the public trust. We got to work together and aggregate them. And I was going in trying to sell these newspapers to aggregate. And, you know, it was like herding cats. They didn't believe that change was going to happen, that we were going to get destroyed by cars.com, by recruitment sites, by Craigslist, the ultimate recruitment site, sucked what, $50 million out of the San Francisco Chronicle. Right.
Why would I share my revenue machine with you? How is that going to make me better? I mean, that was the collective response, right?
Right, totally. And we blew it as an industry. We blew it because, well, there's an old joke. How many psychiatrists does it take to change a light bulb? The answer is one, but it has to want to change in the first place, right? So now that's one reason that I think youth is not running to us, because we still have that image. I'm going to say it. You're going to get hate texts, and I can get them as well. I'll give you my mobile when we're done. But we're an industry of fat old white men. That hasn't changed. I mean, we still are. You know, we're living in, we're not changing. We're not evolving. So we're not attracting youth to this industry. We should, or the youth will create new brands and our brands will go away. And whenever I interview soothsayers now on my podcast, like Ken Doctor or Gordon Burrell, you know, the people who, I mean, I have no crystal ball. I buy high and sell low in my taxes. I mean, on my investments, I can't predict the future, but I look to these prognosticators and I say, when does the brand die? How, if it constantly gets shed, I mean, if finally that brand, that local newspaper brand that's been around for 150 years, if you don't polish it up quick, then does it just die and a new brand comes along? Look what's happening in Denver. I mean, the Colorado Sun is 10 reporters from the Denver Post who walked away. And now they've got millions of page views a month running their own website.
I think also, though, I think there's a flip side to that. I think not only do we have to be willing to change and modify the brands, you know, our old brands that have existed, but I think we can also allow ourselves to embrace these new things that are happening, because look at what the Colorado Sun is doing. That's a great product.
It's an amazing product.
That is a great product. And
they bought the weeklies. They started as a digital only and then invested in Jerry Healy's weekly newspapers. This is an amazing story. They're coming up strong. I love it.
I think we have to not only convince ourselves to change the old, but to embrace these new brands and what these things are doing, because we're seeing a lot all over the country of great reporters.
Oh, yes.
And editors who are having to take the buyouts, right, from their papers. And what do? They just shift over and go launch their own. I think that's becoming, I think, the new trend for State House reporting.
Oh my God! How about Axios now with local franchises or whatever you want to call it? There's an Axios Tampa now. There is actually reporters in Tampa running an Axios site here. Okay, so is that the future? I'd like to see the old brand survive because I know how hard it is to start a brand. Maybe it's just me because I took over a 140-year-old brand and I'm polishing it up. I'd rather see those brands get some energy than watch the Buffalo News. You see, or now we're watching the Denver Post or the Seattle Times. I mean, slowly but surely, and I'm not saying that the Seattle Times is doing a bad job. I'm just picking some out of my brain here, if you know what I mean. But slowly but surely, you know, compressing and losing that audience and losing that street cred. And when I say street cred, readers and business community, that's the two you serve.
Yeah, I think there is a lot of shifting, and I know you were just pulling a name out of your hat, but I think Seattle is a place that is doing some shifting, and they're figuring a lot of stuff out.
Yeah,
to get there, and so I mean I know you were, and I do that too, where I just pull a name out. That's the one in my brain. But I think you've got to embrace all around the new, and we have fought so long to just keep things as they were, and I. Look, I get it. For a long time, especially if you owned a press, newspapers were printing money.
Well, yeah. And that was, again, because we were, you know, an 80% reach distribution system. I mean, the editorial was there. There's no question. Our newsrooms were big and fat, and we had great reporters winning Pulitzer Prizes. We were breaking stories for decades. But for as far as advertising, we were just distribution systems. Most of our ads were done by agencies. We just put them in the paper, inserts and classifieds. We really weren't connecting as much as we should with local advertisers. That has to change now. But we're not the only ones under siege. So is broadcast. We can all look at. I mean, radio.
No, I think news industry is shifting and changing, well, or being forced to. Yeah.
I mean, nobody really listens to radio. They sync their phone with their car now, right? I mean, you're. television. It's all streaming.
Well, I mean, I think everybody is only listening to the ENP podcast and the News Nirvana podcast. I mean, obviously that's what they're doing all the time.
No, I'm with you. I'm just saying that innovation. Okay, what is the best definition I heard of disruption is a virus that attacks the body until the body doesn't know it has it and then it dies. So disruption that occurs, I mean, but everybody's being disrupted. I could go on. Okay, we used to think that the only digital disruption to local business was retail. Here comes Amazon killing local business there. No, it's not. I can get my teeth whitened on the internet. I can buy my car on the internet, get my insurance on the internet. I can do my investments on the internet. I can talk to some doctor, 5,000 miles away and do the whole thing on Zoom and get my prescription. This is a world that's in a massive amount of disruption. So if you want to survive, you have to, what's the old expression? Skate to where the puck is going, the great Wayne Gretzky. I'm sorry.
We have to embrace that disruption.
Right. So again, I would say I like the brands. I think that 140-year-old masthead deserves life. It's got street cred that I think is still there. I just want to see us breathe some life into them. And there's a clock ticking away, if you follow my logic, that we got to watch out for. So that's what concerns me the most. Maybe I'm just an old guy that wants to see those brands survive. Now, let's begin. The Seattle Times is doing an amazing job of reinventing itself. Philadelphia Inquirer, you know, doing an amazing job going nonprofit and doing very, very well. There are some that are becoming less disrupted and growing through the process. But I think it's time for all of us to do that.
Is that switch to nonprofit? And I think we've seen this with a lot of the new startup brands too, where they're kind of going that nonprofit status. Has your newsroom dug into that a little bit?
Yeah, heavy. We're trying to find there's so many different models of what nonprofit can be, should be, because there's some funding out there for that. That's where Colorado Sun isn't nonprofit.
No, it's not.
They're a public-facing company. I mean, there's a different ways you can play this game. I don't want to say it's a game. There's a different ways you can establish yourself. I would say nonprofit is just one of the solutions that some newsrooms can look at today. However, when you talk to Walter Hussman in Arkansas, and I interviewed him on this, he said no. He said there should be some greed in the process to innovate. If you're a nonprofit, you may not move as quickly as you can in the right direction. Having a bottom line to meet, look what he did. He blew up the presses and got profitable. He had an iPad to everyone as subscribers, but the math worked and it's working. I mean, come on. And he's funding his newsroom. So again, and I think because of his need to hit the bottom line,
that drives us, right? We've got to hit that. I want to go backward a little bit, because you brought up you're working on some stuff about the diversity, equity, inclusion, and we've used the word disruption. I think this is going to all tie together here. Also talking about the George Floyd story, right? So the race disruption that's happened across the country over the last 18 months, really. So what are you seeing, I guess, as far as newsrooms and news organizations embracing this, that we have to change the way, not only the way we hire, but the way we look for new hires, the way we analyze, and I don't know if recruit's the right word, but to make ourselves available as a more diverse and representative group.
I mean, look,
you said it to be funny, but it's kind of true too. We're a bunch of old fat white men.
We are,
for the most part. I think we still struggle for gender.
We do.
Representation.
So does our whole society. We can't wait till we have our first female president. Technically, every other president should have been a woman since the beginning of our, I mean, I could go on and on. Every other should now be someone of color. I mean, we're at a point where we have to start having everything match the communities we serve. But again, how many light bulbs does it take to change? You know, and I could go on and on. You asked a damn good question. Whenever I interview and talk to, whether it's in the podcast format or offline, because I'm desperately now, not desperately, I am, my number one priority is to serve the diversity discussion better. And I'm working diligently to launch an entire vertical on this, where I can bring in all the brains and bring them together. Whenever I talk to someone who's immersed in this, I learn more and more that I'm not. In other words, I am not, I am a latte liberal. That, if I can quote again, I was brought up in a suburban Philadelphia family of wealth. My father went to Harvard and was a dentist. My college tuition was paid. I've always been liberal. I've always thought I would, but I don't run that newsroom. I don't understand the inclusion issues. I don't understand what it's like. And I'm learning as I go. So to answer your question, we all have to take a hard look at ourselves. What I have heard from four different, very, very, very knowledgeable people who are working hard on diversity and inclusion in our industry is that the steps that newspapers are taking aren't the best. They're like making someone in charge of it, but not giving them a budget, not giving them any authority. Does that make sense? Not truly letting them change the culture, just giving them the title on their business card and moving on.
It's like when we hired the college graduate, hey, go do our social media. You're young.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, right? That was what we did in the early 2000s.
I mean, if you really truly want to have a diverse and if you want to have the right environment, you have to invest in it hard. Does that make sense? And you've got to put a lot of muscle behind it.
Well, you have to invest in change. We just talked about embracing change, thinking outside the box. You have to invest in those things. You can't just say it.
No, you've got to invest.
And it takes active thinking and actions, and it takes money. You have to financially invest in change as much as your words.
This is possibly the biggest issue we have, because some predict that if we truly don't have a newsroom that reflects our communities, that's another reason why our brands are going to go. And then everybody will find their own niche environments.
But isn't that where that whole discussion about trusting your media, isn't that where it comes to? Is because you trust the person from your community that represents who you are. It all goes back to, yeah, I know the reporter at my local place.
How many times have you and I said the word brand? This is, I mean, when you really think about it, it's a brand has trust involved in it. They call that, when you sell a brand, you're not just selling something with cash flow, you're selling something with marginal utility based on the trust that it also infuses into the minds of the consumer. So yes, does your newsroom have the trust of the local community? Is that reporter's face someone you trust? Is that masthead something you trust? Again, that's why I keep going back to, I'd like to get these brands turned around as quickly as possible, because I love them. I think they've served for hundreds of years. Think about that. What if you destroy a paper that's been around for 150 years in a small town? Do you lose all those archives? Do you lose all that history? Do you lose all that serving to the public? I mean, again, maybe this is just survival of the fittest and we're dinosaurs that will eventually be replaced by another species, but I'm not going to go down that way. And I'm proving it, I think, with EMP. I believe this brand is now going to make it for another 100 years. We're putting every piece of energy I can into it, if that makes sense.
Well, I think that is a wonderful mission and goal for you.
Thank you. I hope my advertisers and readers feel the same. No, I've never had more fun, but I've never had more challenge. It would have been easier for me just to retire and go into another place, putting our money behind it. But I felt a calling to do it, and it's been a great ride, and we're having a lot of fun with it. So the answer is check with my wife and I in 6 months, and we'll tell you how we're doing.
Well, Mike, I appreciate you taking some time today and coming on our podcast just to talk about the industry and talk about what you're doing with ENP. You should be proud of what you're doing.
Thank you. And if anyone wants to reach out to me, it says Mike.Blinder, Mike.Blinder at editorandpublisher.com, editorandpublisher.com. Happy to hear anything, any input, whatever. Love to hear.
And if you aren't getting it delivered to your newsroom, Mike's going to tell you how you can.
Editorandpublisher.com/subscribe. We'd be honored to have you get a copy of ENP each and every month. But the website obviously is vibrant as well. Our email push is to 55,000 each day. Just go to editorandpublisher.com. You'll see everything you need there. We're proud of the news we're generating. We're proud of the connections we're doing for our advertisers. And stay in touch with us.
And if you want to have that other great news product, that news podcast, ENP Reports, you can get it on all of your other podcast apps.
It's everywhere. We got it even on some I've never heard of right now. But we are on iHeart, we're on Apple, we're on Google, we're everywhere you go for a podcast. It's E&P Reports.
Mike, thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
The News Nirvana podcast is available on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or most any of your favorite podcast apps. The News Nirvana podcast is made possible by the generosity of Town News. Connect with Town News at townnews.com. The News Nirvana podcast is produced by Fredcast. Think, speak, act.